We just finished up recording episode 29 with David Hultin from David Hultin Company, a fine woodworker, cabinet maker, and he talked about running a professional cabinet shop, and this is a must listen for anybody who does that. Okay, everybody, welcome to Shop Talk with David Hultin. This is episode number 29, and I'm really excited. David will tell you what he does, but I'm going to try to make sure you know where to find him, because he may not have a big following on Instagram. Or do you do YouTube?
No, no YouTube.
Nope. Okay.
No.
But I met you, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, I met you at Festool Connect in 2017. That was our last one we had here. And I think that was September, right? Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And you came up to me, said, can I get a selfie with you, a picture with you? I'm like, okay. And then I think we chatted for a few minutes, and then I've seen you off and on at big trade shows. I started following you then on Instagram at David Hultin CEO Company. And I was so impressed at all the built-ins and kitchens you built. And I went, now this guy's got chops. And then I went to your website, and I believe it's HultinWoodworks.com. And I was so intrigued. So when we started Shop Talk a few years ago, I was like, you were one of the first on the list, because we wanted to make sure we could talk to a lot of professionals out there who are doing it for a living and just happened to be using some Festool in the mix. So I'm going to leave it. I'm going to start now. And like I always do, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you get started in the industry. Tell us what you do, and we'll go from there.
All right. Well, it's good to be on here. It's a privilege to talk a little bit about what I do and what we do as a business here. So our main line of work is custom cabinetry. So we do anything from full kitchens, full houses worth of things, built-ins, vanities, all different types of cabinetry. So it started as far as that type of stuff. That's what you see pretty much on my Instagram feed and website and those type of things. My career started quite a few years ago. It's almost been 20 years this coming April. And we started out as just saying, hey, I wanted to do something different. So before that point, so I kind of go before and then get into how we started. I went to college and wanted to do something within the college realm. So I love math and science. And so why not do something in math and science? So I got a minor in mathematics and a major in physics, emphasizing in acoustics. Graduated and was like, I don't know what I want to do. So my brother-in-law owns a stair company a couple towns over from us. And just geographically where we're located, we're out in the far western suburbs of Chicago. And so most of our work right now is in the Chicagoland area, North Shore in the city, quite a few different areas. But anyway, so he did, he owned a cabinet company, and I said, hey, you got any work for me for right now? And he's like, sure. You want to learn CAD? I'm like, okay, I'll learn CAD. So a high school guy showed me a couple commands and said, hey, you're going to be fine with this. So I learned how to draw a line and how to erase lines. And that's about all I kind of started with. And so I did shop drawings for my brother-in-law at his stair company. And every once in a while, I'd get out in the shop and do some stuff. And I've always kind of wanted to do more and more with woodworking stuff. But that kind of came on the side eventually. But so I worked for him, did measurements, did eventually got into working proposals, learning bids, learning all that type of stuff. Then we ended up converting the entire shop over to CNC technology and pretty much everything. And that was back in the early 2000s where education was you go and learn. And rather than, hey, I can learn this on YouTube, I can learn this on some type of webcast or whatever, it was all done that direction. So we were kind of shooting from the hip. We had to figure out how to hold down giant stair parts with big 5-inch cutters coming in and just doing some crazy things. So that was a lot of fun, but I always kind of had at that point a little push in my self to say, hey, you know what, I want to kind of do this on my own. So I didn't go in stair route. I went in the house building and cabinetry related things. So I started with a little shop on my property here. Had a 24 by 32 building. Started building some cabinets for some people, and then eventually said, hey, I want to build some houses. So I built, I think, 10 custom homes between 2004 and 2008, 9-ish. And then, of course, everything kind of fell apart with the housing market. So I did a lot of stuff just to stay alive and stay, I guess, relevant and things. And so eventually out of that stuff, I pretty much started building more and more cabinets. Out of built another shop and did some other things. And then that's kind of where we are today after building that side of things. So kind of came from a different realm. Supposedly my grandpa, I never met him, but he was a jack of all trades type of guy. And so I must kind of follow along with him on that side of things, but never really grew up with in a trades household or anything. It was kind of funny. We always had some of my grandpa's old tools, and I had a Black and Decker jigsaw. That was pretty cool. and then from that point, kind of always played around the farm where I grew up at, and was always kind of building a treehouse, doing this, doing that. But we always had one sheet of 4x8 plywood that was laying around the farm. We could never cut it because just in case we needed a full 4x8 sheet of plywood, what are we going to do if we don't have one? So I always just played with scraps my whole life. And nowadays I kind of look, I'm like, oh, 30 years ago, me would love to get the scraps that we make now in the shop, and they're just scraps and they go in the burn pile half the time. But so a lot of stuff has changed, but I've always enjoyed the creative style mostly. So I just felt like I like the trade, but I like the creative side of any type of thing that I get involved in. And so wasn't really classically trained, but curiosity is always your best way to learn. And so sticking your head in cabinets and looking at this, looking at that, looking at pictures, seeing, oh yeah, we could do that. And then eventually trying to develop our way how we build a cabinet. So is there a right and a way how to build it? Certain things are probably better than others, but yet you kind of have to develop your style and what you want to do with that. So it started with pretty much me and a helper. And then I started realizing that I can't do half the things that we're doing now, just me and a helper type of thing. I need to develop a team. And that's when I started. I added my first guy kind of as a part-time thing, and then he enjoyed it, so he came full time with me. And then I realized, hey, we could start looking at bigger jobs, more complex jobs, jobs that would take me 4 or 5 months on my own almost, and now we can start to get those done quicker. And then next thing you know, another guy kind of comes along, and then hired him, and then I'm like, wow, we can actually do more and more things from that point. And then now I have 3 full-time guys. And it's been a learning curve for all that type of stuff, but I feel now I'm developing a business rather than giving myself a job. And no matter which way you look at it, there's always going to be different things here and there. But overall, I think I found 3 great guys. It's not always the case for a lot of people and to find the right type of guys, but I think for what I do, I got a guy that has really developed into the finisher, and we can talk about finishing a lot as we kind of go through. And then one guy that just loves to do anything strange and weird and extra and custom and whatever type of things, I'll give him a direction and kind of point him in that. And then he just loves to take off and do his stuff. We're doing a lot of curves now. A lot of interesting door profiles, a lot of veneering where we're getting into doing vacuum presses. And then we're doing a lot of just different things all over the place. And so he does that. And then another guy that kind of develops into, he loves building boxes. And so there'll be a lot of box type of things. And so, so it's been a transition for me because I used to do everything. And now I feel like I can still do certain portions of things, but, I'm of course the one in front of the clients and the, and the customers. I'm the one that measures. I'm the one that draws. I order. And then the biggest thing I still like to be a part of is all the installs. Because that's where really where all the pieces come together.
Yes.
And we want to
yes.
make sure that this is actually the finished result of what we've been thinking about. And certain clients I've been talking to for a year and a half before this, the thing actually hits the shop. And so I want to make sure that that year and a half worth of work that we've done is really taken all the way to the end. And so our shop is a little different. Some, a lot of times just cabinet makers, and then we just kind of push it off to an installer, but we actually do all our own installs as well. And I feel like we want to be full service, take care of everything from the beginning all the way to the end. And so so nothing really lost, hopefully, in translation and a lot of those type of things.
No, this is great, because a lot of this was questions I had, because I saw you had the employees, so the guys in the shop.
Yep.
I got a question about that.
Yeah.
Because it seems like a perfect mix. You know, the guy who does all the curves and likes the real big challenges and stuff. Like, I have a nephew like that who's just amazing, and he can't just he can't do just finishing, and he can't build just boxes, and he is the lead on everything in a major shop down in North Carolina. How did you meet these guys? Did you run an ad in a paper, or did, were you on a job site installing and you just started talking with them? How did you meet these guys? Because these guys seem like unbelievable people to work with.
Yeah. So so we're, like I said before, we're in the Chicagoland area. And so we are next to massive amounts of work, a massive amounts of designers and builders and all that type of stuff. But the cool thing about where we're at is we're actually out in the country. So my my shop, my house, everything's all on the same property. I got 5 acres out here, and it works out really well. But the thing about it is I'm not next to thousands and thousands of people that would want to work for a company like that. So so when I first started looking a little bit, I was at a job just a mile away from me, which doesn't happen very often, doing a work for a neighbor, friend type of thing. And another guy that was working in there was, I don't know, he was maybe 10, 15 years younger than me. And he kind of had his own work and that type of stuff. And so we started talking a little bit. And he's kind of talking about all these different things going on. And I was like, well, if you ever kind of get burned out with that type of stuff, I'm always looking for somebody to help out here and there. And so so it kind of came out of just kind of reaching out to different type of people that wouldn't typically be like, hey, I'm looking for a cabinet maker. Certain days I'd love to have at that point somebody come in and hit the ground running and say, hey, I can do everything right away. And that comes with, there's pros and cons to that too, because they also come with baggage. They come with, hey, this is the way I do it, and I don't want to learn another way. But some people are like, hey, you know what? I'm not really humble about it, and say, hey, you know what? I want to join you and I want to help you do more things. But anyway, so this guy was, he built an addition, he did siding, he did this. He's probably hung cabinets before. He's done some trim. He's done a lot of different things. And so when he came in, eventually he's like, you know, the working for himself wasn't what he wanted to do. And so he just wanted something that he could come to work, do his stuff, and then walk away. So I said, hey, we can definitely do that type of stuff. So I've trained him in the building and that type of stuff. And at that point I was doing all the finishing, and we worked together on the install side of things. Excuse me. And then, so that probably happened for full time just over a year. And then his best buddy, had been working for a company for 26 years. And, he came out of that stuff and saying he was tired of what he was doing. One of the family members was trying to take over, yada, yada, yada. And he's like, he just wanted something changing. He was getting a little older and said, hey, I want to do something different. And so I said, hey, if you want to join in too. And 3 days later he was working for me, because he told his other boss, and his other boss said, all right, you're done. And then my third guy here was kind of came out of COVID. And he was kind of a little hobby guy, and I've known of him. And I said, hey, if you ever want to come out sometime and do something, kind of learn a little bit of more of the bigger shop stuff. And then, so he'd come out one or two days a week, and he was actually a chiropractor.
Cool.
So COVID hit, and it was kind of a thing for him to say, you know what, that kind of fell apart, and I love doing this type of stuff, and I'm kind of sick of the whole other side of things. And so once that happened, he pretty much became full time. So it kind of fell in my lap a little bit there. And then that's been last probably 3-4 years here of kind of building into that type of stuff. Now, the first guy actually just left in August, and he accepted a job teaching at a trade school, which I'm like, that's awesome. He's teaching at a trade school, but I'm like, it's kind of a bummer that we got to a certain point. We're kind of firing all cylinders. But now I have a new guy that we're training into there. He's younger, he's mid-20s. And I wasn't looking for a cabinet maker per se again. I want to look for a guy that wants to learn, has a good attitude. To a certain extent, small companies, everybody has to get along. If you have one guy in there that's like, just like he might know everything, but he's just going to be a pain in the rear. Can't have that type of thing, because I'd rather train somebody that is willing and that wants to be a part of a team rather than, hey, this guy, he's good, but he's just a pain in the royal butt. So anyway, we're looking forward to getting in the training side of things. So I've been going down quite a bit more into the shop and doing that type of stuff. But overall, the transition was a little bit difficult some days, because, you know, for many, many years, that was my shop. I go down there and I'm like, hey, this is my shop. I know where everything is. I know every single portion. And now I still know how to use the tools and everything, but I'd go look at place. I'm like, where the heck? I found it. I'm like, hey, that's actually a pretty good idea. Yeah. And so I go to the guys. I'm like, I was like, I see you change something. He's like, yeah. I was like, I like it. So, so it's been a good thing to be like, you know what? It's not all about that. It's about building that team. It's about building that type of stuff, because these projects we're working on, there is no way we would ever touch that as just to me, myself, and I. And to a certain extent, it just brings up the level of professionality that we're working with. It brings up all of those type of things, where when I'm talking to a designer, and we're like right now, we have a really cool one that we're starting up. It's a historical renovation in Lincoln Park, which is a nice area of Chicago. They're spending quite a bit of money within this project. And when the designer says, hey, we want to do this, I love to say, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. I don't like saying no to anything. Sometimes it's been like, oh, I should have said no, because that was a little bit rough to get through. But overall, we know that, you know what, we have the facility, we have the guys, we have everything that we need, we can make it work. And it's been a fun transition. Do I miss the days of going out there and just working in the shop? Absolutely. But overall, that's just where we need to be right now. Just a background. I mean, I got 4 kids, 2 are in college, 2 are in high school. My wife is a photographer. So that means that on weekends for weddings, I'm a photographer. We own a boutique as a family too. So we have 2 of those and a mobile trailer. So we have lots of things, entrepreneurial stuff going on. But I feel like, you know, having a team that if I'm not there for a day, stuff still happens. And I feel like progress still goes throughout. So it kind of takes some of the flexibility away from me, but yet it also gives me the flexibility to do things that I wouldn't necessarily be able to do. So it's kind of a double-edged sword with some of that stuff, but that's where I like to be right now. And I need to keep the foot on the gas for a while, because I still got more kids to get through everything.
Absolutely. So, okay. 2 questions really quick. First one's a quick one. Do you ever sleep?
I try to sleep really well. And that's one thing I try to prioritize on that type of stuff, because if you don't sleep, you can't really perform on different types of things. I don't really have a lot of extra time, which is no problem at all. But Like in the summertime, it's fun because my second daughter, she has a jewelry business, so she likes to make rings and necklaces and a whole bunch of different things. We go out on a Saturday and we set up a tent and do all that type of stuff. I roll a whole system in the back of our Sprinter. And but there's not too many times where we get to hang out and go out on Saturday and just sit around and hang out for a while. So it gives me, even though we're working and doing things, it gives us some time together and that type of stuff. Then we have a trailer for our boutique, which is, it's not woodworking stuff, but I go out with my oldest daughter and we spend 5 6 hours selling ladies clothes on certain Saturdays in the summertime. And but if we're still hanging out together and doing things like that. So so we try to make work as part of our family type of things. And luckily my office is right at my house, so I can go in and do that type of stuff. And but like I said, I couldn't be doing, the guys take a lot of the workload as far as the physical type of things out of it. And I just got to make sure I'm keeping up with them. Certain days we're like, I'm getting drawings every single day out to them, making sure that they have what they need. And doing that. So it's fun.
You're really blessed having those employees, because I was in a situation where I had a full, we were full time, me and my business partner, a cabinet shop, doing similar stuff, built-ins, and it was just cabinetry, no fine furniture. I would venture off on the side and do some pieces for people, but my whole thing with bringing in a helper, and this was South Florida, was trust. And the trust was not only in the shop and leaving them there, but also on a job site helping on an install, because they were always trying. I caught one guy trying to grab side work from me, and that is just what a hassle that is. And I'm so impressed, because that was one of the things I wanted to, and you covered it perfectly, is finding the right people. I had, and I'm going to continue just for a second. I had somebody in Fort Lauderdale who I would consider one of the top cabinet plus trim carpenters. Very well known down in the area. Very well known. And he said, "Hey, Sag, I want to hire you." I go, "No." He goes, "Listen, you're in between jobs." I go, "No." He goes, "You're perfect." I go, "No, I'm not, because I'm going to go in there." And you said this already, David. It's your way. I go, "You have a way of building, and I have a way of building. And I don't want to step on your feet because we're friends. And I think we would clash too much." He goes, "I want to hire you even more now." Because he knew I understood that I wasn't a turnkey person. It's his way or the highway, because you have built that reputation. And it's really nice to hear how you, and when I heard you said you're bringing in this new guy, you are willing to train them. I think it's all about humbling yourself and having the right attitude in somebody's shop that you're working for somebody. And
Oh,
that it's,
absolutely. I 100% agree with that. So, because I don't want to be like, if somebody, if one of the guys said, "Hey, you know what? I think we could do things this way a little bit." Most of the times, I'm like, "Absolutely," because I'm not the know-it-all type of a thing. But
yes.
overall, I think that as a, I want to put a global vision out there to say this is what the finished product is. Sometimes we can get to it in a couple different ways, but I still
Yes.
want to make sure my brand is my brand. On
Yes.
that style of things. But I think a lot of people are looking for an employee that knows everything when they come in. And that's where I think issues start happening, because then you got two alphas coming at each other and just basically saying no type of a thing. And I think that's a difficult part for a lot of people to swallow, be like, well, I need to get somebody that knows what they're doing. I'm like, you need somebody that is willing to learn. Of course, if they know how to use a table saw and a chop saw, it always helps, because you don't want to necessarily start from a negative side of things. But yet, I think those are the type of people that make the best things to build your business, is finding something that's willing to learn and that's basically going to kind of check those things at the door and say, okay, this is part of working for somebody, is going to be going with their vision and their direction and that type of stuff. Because after a while, if you find somebody that wants to just get in there, learn things, but then also automatically knows that, oh, I'm going to go out and start my own company. That's a whole nother thing that some people work through. And to a certain extent, There's a lot of cabinet makers out there, but yet for what we do in our area, there's not a lot of us that there's production guys that just can't do half the things that we do because they're in a production mindset. If I was in a complete production mindset, half these jobs we're working on now are just put the skid the brakes on and go back and be like, I have to completely rethink about what we're doing. And then the small guys can't handle half the things that we're doing too. So there's a room for every version out there on something like that. But a lot of times I look where I'm at, I'm like, well, it's still going to be quite a few years before they're ever going to catch up with where we're at too. On certain things like that. And quite a few hundreds of thousands of dollars of investment involved with that type of things. And so I can't expect that I'm, and really there's not, I don't really say there's competition out there because competition is kind of a weird word with where I'm doing things because everybody has a niche to a certain extent. Yep. And everybody, if they're comparing me to somebody else, it's going to be somewhat different. So most of the times I want to keep the word of mouth going out there and then competition mm-hmm. sometimes goes away because most people, if they say, hey, I was referred to you by so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, they already know, they automatically know who I am and what type of stuff that we do. And they don't want to necessarily go shop things. Now, if we were budget people out there just doing full overlay, frameless cabinets that you can get at home stores and everything, they're a dime a dozen out there and it's hard to compete with that type of stuff. And so when I develop a niche of saying, hey, you know what, we're 95% inset. We deal with beaded things. We deal with this and that and continuous grain, all those type of things that they're not going to find a ton of people out there. And if they do, and if they want to go with somebody, there's a lot of work right now. And whenever somebody asks me, hey, what's your lead time? I'm going to say, probably 16 weeks at least, maybe plus that type of stuff. And if you find somebody less than that, I don't know if I would necessarily go with them because right now it's feast right now. And it's that type of stuff. We've been through a lot of famine and, but right now it's feast time. And so, people should be busy at this time of the, what's kind of going on, especially in our area and kind of what's going on. Every time that one of the designers, will post out there about or tag me in a post or something like that, usually I get three or four more that reach out to me and said, hey, I need somebody. So that's the type of stuff within that business side of things is where we're at. So now as far as me growing from that point on, I don't really want to grow in size too much more because we'd have to find a new shop or add on tremendously, which after a certain point, it becomes cost prohibitive. We could go get a new shop someplace else. And instead of being where we're at, we're going to go up to 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 square foot, bigger machines, bigger this, more guys, everything. In the end, then I start to even lose even more personal aspect of every single job. So I still want to keep that because that's what I enjoy doing. I like to be a part of as much as I can. Mm-hmm. And after that point, so I want to be known more of a guy that does even crazier things and works on crazier jobs and all that type of stuff. Yeah. That's where I want to see us grow is taking on those type of jobs that are even better, hopefully profit margins, things like that, and grow in a way of that rather than in physical size right now. So
yeah, you. It sounds like the way you were saying, because we were the same way. There was no way I was putting something on a truck for an install and I wasn't doing the install because I had spent all that time building and boy, every installer would come to the shop, you know, 2-3 a day would say, hey, can I install your stuff? And I went, no, it's my name's going on there. Our name was going on, me and my business partner. And that's a tough thing. It goes back to what I just said. It was trust. Hey, you also said something else about, I didn't like to say no. I was in a house one time and we walk out and Mikey, my business partner, goes, we know how to do that? And I go, no, but we're going to learn, right? Yep. Have you ever been caught where you say, boy, I shouldn't have taken on that job or I'm getting...
I wouldn't necessarily say I've been caught. The struggle sometimes is even with having... four of us total within there, we can still get a lot of work done. Sometimes we get into the point of also on all these jobs, and we're starting to do bigger jobs now, which are good because once you kind of get involved in it, everything kind of goes together. But yet when you're involved in a big job, it's hard to squeeze in small jobs because you're starting to get like, oh my goodness, I have 3 months worth of work to do in this job right here. And I've got a couple jobs out there that are a week long, and where am I going to put those without pushing the other job off and things like that? And that's a hard thing. And all the schedules nowadays, they might say they want something in January and it might be March. But then you automatically thought about something maybe that's going to be in April, but it comes back to March. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, where I thought it was going to be is not where it is. And so that's where it gets a little bit difficult when you said yes to some of the bigger jobs. It's like, ooh, we have to do that. And we got to figure out a way to do it. Now, most of the times for me, I work a lot of times in bringing out the boxes to keep people pacified and to keep people, the project going. They can get countertops measured. They can get all that type of stuff. And then we can come in, we can put trim on, we can put the drawers and doors on. We can do all that type of stuff after that. So I always want to keep the process going. So some jobs are elongated because of that. So we might be working on it in, let's say we worked on something in September, but I'm going to go back in sometime later October to do those type of things because, but the jobs are progressing, which is good for the end user and the client and, or the builder, whether type of stuff. But for us, it takes a little bit more because we're bouncing, but that's kind of where it needs to be. So like sometimes when we said, hey, can we actually do that? We had one this last summertime that we did. It was a cool job out on Lake Michigan, overlooking the lake in northern Indiana out there. And they wanted everything to be continuous grain / no integrated handles on everything in Riffson White Oak, which is super cool. But of course, we have to go, the handles need to be solid wood because we can't really veneer into the handles. So we're actually building these doors with solid tops with an MDF core type of thing, putting that all together. And then we're actually veneering all of our veneer work over top of all that type of stuff so we stay consistent in what we're doing. We've never done veneer stuff. So called up a couple different people and we had a veneer bag press here. Couple weeks later and we started playing around and we did the entire project. One of those things we said yes, but automatically we knew in the back of my head that, all right, we're going to have to get some different equipment, different things. But nowadays, I don't know what happens with the projects, but of course now you have the press and you don't advertise it to say, hey, we'll do things. Nowadays, the reading is really big. So we're actually veneering all of our thin reading onto composite panels. We're doing this on the press. We're doing that on the press. And so now I don't know what people are like, oh, you must have something like that. So we're just going to say we want this and this and this done. And we're like, all right, we know we can do it because we've already been using that type of stuff. And so, So it's one of those things where I was glad we said yes. Now that project was a big project and took us longer, I'm sure, than we would the next time and the next time type of thing. But it's always one of those things to put in the portfolio and say we got to be a part of and do. So,
you were saying word of mouth. Do you work with a certain set of builders, remodelers that say, hey, I need this, David, and you go from there? Do they ever hand you plans of something or do you do all the design?
So I work in both realms. Well, anywhere between I do everything to I'm copying an exact thing of what they really want. So anywhere in between the two, we've done it before. So I work with a lot of designers right now as well. And so actually I would say right now 90% of my work came from Instagram. That were actually I could root back to somewhere within the Instagram world of where it actually came from. So and right now, one of my good buddies is, he's, it's Arkwright Construction. He's a good guy to follow too, but you'll probably see most, a lot of my work. We hooked up on Instagram probably 5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And, he was just kind of getting bigger at that point. And, we did a project together and then we did another project. And then some of his projects would go into, this designer be part of it that he had worked for. So then that designer gets to know me, and then somebody else gets to know, and then all the type of things, the snowball effect happens. And so, so somebody like him, he's going to typically have a designer that has developed plans and developed type of systems. And so some of those ones are fairly rough, or they have the over idea. And then I have to basically take it and make it pretty and work it from that point. And then sometimes we'll get to a project where it's just a kitchen remodel, and I do all the design from A all the way through to Z on that type of thing. But a lot of times it's a different level of design that we have to do. So sometimes I'm actually doing the layout and those type of things. A lot of times with designers, we have the fact of we're working with something that's dedicated to say, this is exactly what we want. But my design time and my thought process is, all right, how do we actually get to that point? Because we have to manipulate this and that in order to get to exactly what they want. It's not like, oh, that's an easy thing to do. It's like, oh, now my time, instead of doing the layout, my time is involved with how are we actually going to physically get that thing to work. Wow. And so whether it's how the pocket door hardware is going to work, how this thing's going to work, how that thing's going to be integrated. They want to make this thing disappear. We're doing a lot of pantry entries that look like cabinet doors, but we want to make it all look consistent going across there. How do we make that part work with that part, work with the internal part? Because they're not thinking of how's it physically going to happen. They're thinking of this is the aesthetic we want to have happen. And gotcha. So that's where my design time kind of comes through. So so a lot of times they'll have, we work with architects as well. And so we're at a project where it was three designers, two guys from the architect firm, and then two or three people from the building stuff. And we're all collaborating together. Those jobs are, there's a lot of stress involved and things like that, but they're overall fun because we're taking a whole bunch of things together and we're trying to make it into something that's real at the end. And so, yeah. So colors, I mean, I think painted every single color under the rainbow, and wood species and stain on the wood species and this finish and that finish and this profile and that profile. And so it really makes it wild.
Designers see your portfolio, which is incredible, on Instagram. And that's when or a client says, I want to use this guy. How do I go about using this guy?
Yes. And most of the time it's the designer reaching out on that type of thing. Because, most of these designers are, the client would hire them directly, and then they pretty much will run to say, this is the final product that we want them to do. Every once in a while, there's a homeowner involved, with that, but it's a weird transition. Sometimes I would be so used to working with a homeowner. We would know them so well because we developed the whole entire design system, 4, 5, 6 meetings sometimes, and then this and that all the way to the end. Nowadays, is we're working with when we work with designers, we work with the designer, doing all that type of stuff. Maybe a quick 5-minute meeting with the homeowner, and then we'll see him when we're installing and saying hi, and then we're kind of done. So it's a different, but we're still involved with them to a certain extent, but just in a more hands-off approach on things like that too. So. It's been definitely a learning curve with a lot of that type of stuff. And, but we've got, in front of some really, really cool projects, and we have a lot of fun things coming up that, always keeps us excited to keep trying to do this thing.
Yeah. It sounds, sounds like you're as passionate as when you started, huh? It's pretty cool.
Certain days. Yeah. Certain days it does feel like a work. I mean, no matter what happens, some days you're like, oh my goodness, I gotta figure this and that. And, but overall, I always love this style of work because there's something tactile in the end.
Yes.
And that's the thing that eventually certain days you might have design burnout where I just sit there, stare at the computer and be like, I don't even know where to start on this one and that type of stuff. But then you know that down the line, you're going to see the thing and come to full fruition and see something tactile and be like, oh, well, even though that first part started out weird and all that type of stuff, it came out awesome and we're all excited and happy about it. But to a certain extent, we can't get too happy because, hey, there's one more behind it. There's one more behind it, and we got to keep everything else rolling. So,
okay. So I still have a ton of questions.
Yeah. But, yeah. No, I'm.
And I sometimes I just get so into listening to people that I look up and I go, what is it, like 12:05 or whatever? Okay. So I have to ask you a Festool question. When I met you at Connect and you said, yeah, I have some Festool, I was on cruising your Instagram account. Mm-hmm. So how the heck did you start to use Festool? How'd you hear about it? And I see you use it for a lot of install, but maybe you could talk a little bit about that, David.
Yep, absolutely. So so I went on my own back in 2004. And I had another friend of mine that was kind of a probably 5-10 years ahead of me type of thing and kind of doing their own type of style of things. And I think he had a Festool sander at that point. And so that's when I started to look. I'm like, oh, what's this Festool thing? And that was back when you had some sanders and track saws and some things like that, but not to the portfolio of what you would have right now on something like that. And so I started out, my first purchase was the, probably the, was it the ETS 150 maybe, or the big brick sander type of a thing? With a CT22 vacuum. Cool. So that was my first purchase back in 2004. A couple months later, I invested in the TS55 track saw. And that really, so thankful that I went back to that point. And I think I'm like, that was huge from what I was doing. Now, I wasn't using any sustainers at that point. I'd just take the sustainers and put them up on a shelf someplace because I'm like, what do you do with this style? That was still generation one sustainer on something like that. And so, but, and that's one thing I preach to so many people. So I get out and I see a lot of trim carpenters. I see a lot of other people out there. And to this day, people still will be like, why do I need a track saw? And I always tell them, why don't you need a track saw? So I was out on Monday on an install, and we did this, we did a weird cut at a 45, and it's just really a strange thing. I'm like talking to the new guy. I'm like, see, a lot of people say you don't need a track saw. What the heck would you have done with, without that thing at that point? And so I probably sold lots and lots and lots of track saws out there, hopefully, but you never know. So that was back where I started within that type of thing. So I used, and to this day, that CT22 has been in my shop for, it'll be 20 years this April. It'll be it'll be in the shop, and the only thing I do to it is change the bag. It was on a sander for probably 18 years. This last 2 years has been over on the Capex chop saw that we have.
That's what I have
with the digital fence. We have that one over there, and so it's been over on that one now for the couple years. And so the amount of times that things went on off and on, I don't know, but it's been crazy. And then after that point, got another sander or two along the way. And then eventually in, I think, 09, I went with the Capex for my install saw. That was first generation, probably Capex at that point. And a lot of people always say like, oh, it's underpowered or it's this or that. Well, it's actually not underpowered if you use it right. So if you're an animal, well, stay away from half these things because you're just a complete nutter hack out there just trying to go crazy and go. And you know what? If you use it to what it's actually supposed to do, then it's a great saw. And that saw is still alive and kicking. And that's in the trailer that gets brought into every single install that we've done since 2009. So, right there. I've since got another one in the shop that I use for all my cut to length and that type of thing. And then from that point, probably around, I don't know, 15, 16 is when I started to basically say, I want to convert my entire road system into the sustainer system. And so it's been, it took a couple years to get to that point. But nowadays we have, and actually every single cabinet since 2016 or 17, every single cabinet in the shop's been put together by a TSX. So every single pocket screw from face frames to the cabinets and everything is TSX or CSX. We've been using those two. So I probably own 8, 9 of those within the company there.
Well, I am going to retire.
Yeah, I've probably paid for some of your retirement on that. And then yeah. we have a Domino that we use for certain type of things. And it's one of the things where you don't use all the time, but when you use it, you're like, oh, this is a no brainer to use it at that point. And then all of our road stuff, we have jigsaws and the material for the end cut and the mid. We got a couple midis now. We got the new cordless miter box.
You got
60.
That? Yeah,
got the miter box. Yeah, haven't swung for the table saw yet, but we'll see. Yeah, we don't use a lot of table saw on site. But then everything else, I do have some Milwaukee drills here and there that we use for certain things. we got some other miscellaneous, like a belt sander that's a Milwaukee and some things like that, but they go into sustainer. Every single thing. So we have probably 5 stacks that we have in the front of the trailer that I don't build into the trailer because our trailer is mostly for carrying things to the job site. We don't work out of it. We just roll everything that we need to within there. I got the roll air compressor and the sustainer. We use Kadex, mostly Grex for our micro pinners and that type of stuff. They go in their own sustainer. We have pretty much everything involved in there. We have one sustainer that has just yellow tape on it. So if any tool has a piece of yellow tape on it, it goes into that sustainer. So between the hammer and the this and the that and all those miscellaneous little hand tools, they all have a yellow thing. So everybody knows that goes to that sustainer. So just the, and I've had a lot of people comment to be like, wow, this is, they don't know what they're looking at, but they know that this is organized. This is clean. This is just put together in that type of realms. And so we've, and all the guys feel like they have a way to organize where it's not like throwing a whole bunch of stuff in a bag and being like, I'll figure it out. Or, and we're not, now if we were framer carpenters, that's a whole different thing when you get into pack outs and get into things like that. But for what we do and what we've been doing, the organization system, has been second to none on that type of thing. I mean, I even have my, the guy who does the finishing with me, he has, he does a lot of little things on the side here and there, and he's pretty much transitioned all into, Festool stuff. And so it's been, so he sees the worth of what it actually kind of all is. And there's certain things I get, I'm like, I have the cool tainer or whatever that is. I've used it once maybe, but hey, I have it. Yeah. So I'm still getting used to the new drill, the new CSX, the 12 volt one.
Yep.
Still getting used to that. It has a little different feel, a little different stuff right there. Overall it's just because I'm so used to using the original CSX for everything that we had. It just has a different feel, the ramp up factor, but I could tell that more thought was put into it than even the first version. So it's just a matter of getting used to it and getting that kind of involved in what we do.
My buddy, down in, Lexington, Kentucky area, he likes the new CXS, but he won't. He goes, I still got to have those other ones because he goes, I got 4 of them and they're perfect for getting into drawer boxes and slides and everything. There's just something about the thinness of it that he likes. So,
yeah, it's just something about it. So eventually I'll be like, yeah, this is where we need to be. I like the power out of it. I like some of that type of stuff, but overall it's just, you can tell thought has been put into pieces like that. But now I have 3 different track saws that we have in the shop and on the road. And so, and I try to make it to where the shop is completely cut off from the trailer. I don't want to have any cross contamination going through there or anything else, because once that happens, we're like, where'd that go? Oh, we took it in the shop and things like that. So everything is duplicated to what it is. And so if we have tracks in the shop, we keep those tracks in the shop. We have tracks on the road, they stay on the road, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, and I have my own little set too, that I have just for me. So that way the guys don't yell at me to be like, hey, you took my thing out of the trailer. I'm like, yeah, I was doing my own person. I don't know. So I try to separate that type of stuff. So,
Way cool, man. Yeah. I always get it. We had a set also for installs, plus what we had in the shop, whether it's Festool or any other tool. We had install set, shop set of stuff. Because I can't tell you, we always had a checklist too, walking out of there, what you were going out to the install with and what not to forget.
Yep.
Because, boy, I hated getting out there and going, oh, no, we forgot that. It's just a hassle. And you have to
go,
but in Fort Lauderdale, Home Depot, where Lowe's, they're on every corner. But still, it was just the hassle back and forth.
And yeah, and in the shop, we have a sliding table saw. We got all that. So we don't use the track saw quite as much in the shop for certain things because we do have the industrial size of pieces and things like that. So, but it's always, we still have that track saw there because you get into a certain point, you're like, oh, I don't want to set that up and do that. It's easier with track saw. So,
It's all coming about because I was on, like I said, I was on your Instagram account and I saw that, I saw something about the NAMM show, but I look in the background of your office right now and I see the guitars. And then in the very beginning, you said you were a minor in mathematics and a physics major geared toward acoustics, right?
Yep.
Okay. So now it's coming around full circle. So what I was seeing, so how the heck did you get to NAMM? Because I've been wanting to go. I have a friend who's got an open invite for me and I have heard about the show. And it's invite only, and it's a who's who in the world on music and instruments. And, and he says the jam sessions there are unbelievable. So how did you get there? I saw the post.
Yep. So back in 2019, early 2020. So it was fall time, and every once in a while, I'll get into the fact of I want to do a couple pieces of furniture or do something like that and a different creative outlet on that side of things. And so I went up to just a small little craft fair town half hour north of us. And it was a cheap little thing. We've done the craft fair for other versions of what we've done. And so I took up a table and some couple other things, sat there for the entire weekend, pretty boring, and talked to one guy and really didn't think about anything about it. And so later on that week, after I cleaned up and I was like, it was pretty much a waste of time. He calls me up or texts me or maybe emails. I forgot what it was. And he works for this company called Upstaging. Upstaging is in the town of Sycamore, which is half hour north of us. And they have been around since the 70s. And they are a production company that pretty much does the trucking, the lighting, a lot of the production of about every rock show you see out there. So if you see the massive shows with moving lights and this and that and this and that, it was produced or has production value from this company called Upstaging. I knew it was there, but I never really thought about anything. So this guy works for Upstaging. They have 500, 600 semis on the road. They have boxes and boxes and boxes as far as you can see of lighting and rigging and this and that. And so anyway, he's like, you know, we have a wood shop, but I really want to do something different for this show coming up. Would you be interested? I'm like, yeah, send me whatever you have over. He sent me stuff over and it was for building display work for Gibson guitars. And so I'm like, so kind of like two things meld together. Like, my business is overwhelming. I enjoy playing guitar. I played for in a worship team for many, many years with my church and a lot of other things throughout college. I played some different things. And so I'm like, how many times do you get an opportunity to do work for Gibson guitars? So I don't know. I probably didn't make any money on the show, on the thing, because I just wanted to get it done. So he came up with some designs. And so we ended up building some display work for Gibson. And then he's like, hey, do you want to actually go out and just give me what a price would be for you to go out to Anaheim, California and do the setup portion? And you can stay around for the show and do whatever you want to do, because once you're involved with Gibson, they pretty much take care of you from that point. And I was like, absolutely. January in Anaheim, California for 10 days. And so I went out there. I set up our stuff for a couple, took me a couple hours, but I pretended like it took a couple days. And so I got to be part of their whole VIP process and got to go behind the scenes and do all that. So When you're there, they pretty much have a party the whole entire time. So we got to go to their VIP, gifts and only invite only, show that they had. So first thing we get there, it's John Stamos, is the MC. And then you got this person coming out, that person coming out. And then next thing you know, it's probably a party of 300 some people that there were all sitting around eating. And then Slash is out there playing. And then a guy from the Eagles, and then ZZ Top guy, and this guy, and that guy, all out there just playing a private show for us. And
Wow.
then we got to be a part of the whole thing and got to take pictures next to cool guitars hanging from my display work that we did at that point. And not too many times do you get that thing from a show that was absolutely, I thought at the end, this is going to get me nothing. And how boring was that? And all of a sudden, I get the opportunity of a lifetime to go and have both of my passions kind of meld together. And so I ended up making a stool for them, and poured some epoxy in it and did their whole logo and everything that I let them have out there. But I kept that for my private, in my thing. So over in the corner over there, is my reminder all the time of my Gibson, event that I had. So
Wow,
yeah, so that was a fun little project.
that is
So
really
eventually, who
cool.
knows if we'll get to do something like that again. That show has changed quite a bit since COVID and since all that type of stuff kind of had to fall apart a little bit. But I think they're back to doing big stuff again. So,
That has another question I have here is, boy, that 2020 rocked a lot of people. How did it affect you and your business? 2020, how did you pivot? What happened? Because
Well, it's
I've been in a situation where I had to pivot because the economy went south on me, one year,
For this
and
one, the economy didn't really go south for us. We actually got busier and busier. And I think part of that wasn't necessarily all from COVID. It was just how we positioned ourselves previous years, trying to get to the right people and finding our right client. And once you find your client in anything that you do, it makes your work a lot easier because you're finding your right type of client. You're not trying to force anything. But anyway, so I think we had some good luck before that point to get us to a point where we could feel like we're still growing at that. And we basically said to the guys, like, we're gonna still work. And they're like, yeah, well, what else are we gonna do? And so we still worked and we still pushed just as hard. The biggest thing for us is it changed on availability of product, price of product, and what we had to do to get the product. And so our raw material costs went through the roof. Bloom, which we use exclusively for drawer slides and hinges and everything, put the whole world on allocation. And so luckily, where we get everything from, they did a great job of trying to use that allocation and give it to the right people rather than just having somebody come in and say, I want 10,000 slides, and they pull out all the allocation for that company. They actually allocated properly, but still it was a lot of work. So we had to use a couple other drawer slides, which are just, if you're not using them, it's like using your thumbs. It's horrible. And then we had to change a lot of brands of plywoods and this and that because of availability. We had to change a lot of that type of stuff. So it felt like what used to take a half a day to order everything in and or a day to get everything ready, it took 3 or 4 days sometimes because I'm calling this company and calling that company. So instead of just using my typical one or two companies, I'm branching out to four, five, six in order to find what we need. So I was like, you, how much do you have of this? And they're like, we have this much. All right, give me that and I'll try to find the other 10 sheets someplace else. And so that was our biggest thing. And then of course, plywood used to be X amount and then it went up 50, 75%. And I'm like, oh, so I got to try to, in certain, I didn't want to go to some people and say, oh, your job's going to cost this much more. So you kind of ate it for a while and then you had to recoup it later on. And so it was a lot of that type of stuff. And then, of course, certain jobs we had to do at a certain time or we had to avoid people or do that type of stuff. But overall, we made it through it. And certain times I wish it was back when you go into the city. There's nobody on the road. Man, those times
My wife
of
said that
traffic was like,
the
I know those times of traffic were like, man, that was amazing. We could get there
day.
in an hour and 10 minutes, and now it takes us 2 hours. Bring back COVID. That was amazing. Give everybody back to home again so we don't have to go to the office.
But oh, my God. And in Indianapolis, when I moved here 17 years ago, there was barely any traffic, but everybody found out how great it is. And then when COVID hit, my wife said, wow, this is the best part about COVID. It's back to 2007 traffic. It was wild. Yep. We could get places quicker. Mm-hmm. Yeah. know what?
So, but overall, I think, I think it was one of those things where we got through it. What I wanted to happen again and all the different issues, every once in a while, we'll still run into something that still has a little residual of what it is, but it taught us a ton and we can maneuver a lot quicker now. I mean, at that point, we're just like, all right, I think we can get it. And I was telling the guys, I think that stuff is going to come in on that day, but we'll see how long that is. And we had to build a lot more things in-house per se sometimes because lead times went up to 16 weeks for things that used to be 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And so we basically forced us into doing more in-house, which is fine. We can do it. But yeah, it's.
It
was kind of crazy.
You said you've run into a couple of residual things. I was trying to think about something that happened to me the other day and I went, oh, that was like a long time ago. And then I realized, oh, that was only like 3 years ago. And
yeah, I know. Yeah.
And every once in a while you run into something, you go, oh yeah. Some people still think that way. Okay. What else do I got here? Man, this is awesome. You still good on time?
I'm great.
Okay. I want to ask you, because I saw the post, of course, and about a missions trip to Ecuador. You were building cabinets down there. How did that come about? And what happened down there? Because that
was
just
one of those it's one of those type of things you never know when you answer your phone where it's going to go. And so we were actually on a family vacation, and I had a builder that I did some work for here and there, but hadn't heard from him for a while. And I saw he was calling me. I was like, I'm going to answer the phone for the fun of it. And so he's like, it's going to sound weird, but you know, I'd love for you to come on a mission trip with me. And I'm like, all right, sounds good. He's like, no, think about it. I'm like, no, this is cool. I want to do it. So I hadn't been on a mission trip since I've been in high school. And you know, for a while, there's certain things you do when you have kids and you have a family that you don't do, that you want to do, but you can't do, and all those type of things. Well, it got to the point where the kids were functional. I wasn't leaving my wife with three, four little tiny ones and all these type of things. We were getting more guys into the shop, so I felt like stuff could still happen, and I wasn't like disappearing for a while and being like, eventually I'll come back. And it just came at the right time. And so, it's funny because I actually applied for my passport a week before I left for that last vacation. And so I was like, hey, and funny you think, I actually have my passport already in line and that type of stuff. And so with a couple guys from his church and a couple guys from when he was back in college years and years ago, they come sometimes do stuff together. There were six of us, and we went down to this mission down there that was adding a discipleship house, and they needed a kitchen built. And so they had a little shop that had a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And sorry about that. It came back to saying, all right, so I reached out to a lot of different people in a lot of different areas. We took down a lot of tools. I wanted a cordless track saw, so I brought my corded one down. Because the cordless is actually a lot better than the corded version. And so I took that one down. I needed to bring a track with, so I actually cut it in half, and then I got a spline to put it back together again. And we built an entire kitchen with five other guys that didn't have a clue in less than a week. And it was kind of fun to work with the guys. And it's always funny whenever you get somebody that doesn't know how kind of golf's good. It's all about the prep and the getting all those type of things.
Yep.
But then it comes to by day three, they're like, we're never going to get this thing done because it's just pieces laying everywhere. And then another half day later, they're all put together because we did all the prep work right and everything. Yep. They all go, oh, they're like, oh yeah, we're going to make it. We're going to make it. So it was just a great opportunity, and and some great guys down there. We ended up getting to go into the jungles for a couple of extra days. We went down to the jungles in the headwaters of the Amazon on the east side of Ecuador. And got to see some really cool areas and that type of stuff. And then this last February, we got approached to do another trip down there. And that wasn't cabinets. We were actually starting the framing of a house. And I'm like, all right, well, so I ended up getting my brother-in-law together and my nephew and another friend from our church and a couple other guys that came in. And we framed up an entire house pretty much in that same week. And got to hang out with my brother-in-law and cool thing. And my nephew's been doing some great things too. And he joined in with us on that. And so we got number two down there. And great thing about it, kind of gets you out of the country and see other things. We were in a mill this year, milling our own 2x4s because they don't really conventional frame too often. Yeah. And so there's three of us in this mill and they could actually use some festival stuff within that. I mean, it was like stuff that we would see back in the 40s and 50s in there. And I'm like, man, I miss my shop. I miss my shop where it's all right there and we have proper dust collection and it's great. But it's always good to do that type of stuff to kind of get you out of your comfort zone a little bit and to use some of the experience that you've had for multiple years and do those type of things. So that was number two, and hopefully we'll do some more coming up again.
All right. Okay. So another one, if we could keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw you had a bunk of plywood delivered, and you were talking about supply chains and everything. There was a brand I had never heard of it, and tell me if I'm pronouncing it right. It's Garnica.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Okay. And you were saying how good this plywood is. Here, two things. One, how did you come across this brand? But two, how do you determine what is quality ply?
Mm-hmm. So back when I started, I would I'd be like, well, I don't need pre-finished plywood because I can just spray it when I'm spraying the cabinet, something like that. Of course, I would say a lot of things back then. And then all of a sudden you use it and you're like, where has this been my entire life?
Exactly.
And so in the search for the right type of plywood, I want to be as close to 3/4 as possible for what we do. Mm-hmm. Just because I don't want import. I don't want any of that type of stuff in my shop because it stinks. It's not consistent. It's just all over the place. And then you're down to 18 mil and then you're down to doing weird math and all that type of stuff. So that's where I want to start with. We ran across Garnica here, probably from a supplier, maybe brought it in as a sample. And the cool thing about that product is it's a poplar core. And so it's got some good stability. It's got some great veneers on the top of it for that. But it's light. And to a certain extent, as you get older, you don't want to necessarily be humping 100-pound plywood around and things like that. So we used it for quite a long time. But we go back to COVID times and things like that. It pretty much messed Garnica way up just because of they got behind on imports and everything else. And then, so we couldn't get it. And if we could get it, it might be a sheet here or there, which doesn't really help us.
No.
So we had to transition into a domestic plywood out of Murphy. Still really close to 3/4. The top veneer, I think, is just as well. But right now we can get Garnica again. But the problem is the price has not moved at all from where it was. And so after a certain portion, I have a hard time to justify another 30% higher in materials. And so we've got used to what we've been using and we can get it and it's consistent. So we're a domestic right now on that type of thing. I always still keep my eye on that product right there. And it's come down a tad bit, but nothing like the other versions have. And so eventually for the difference in what we're kind of working with now, if it was import overseas type of thing to Garnica, then I would say I got to pay it, but I don't see the difference as much right now. And so that's all stuff that we're working through as we kind of go through. If I could get that stuff for close to the same, I'd be all over it again, because that stuff was just amazing. It's light. It's stable and it just makes everything from cutting it all the way to carrying the cabinets up to a third floor to anything else that much easier. Yeah, and so we're using that. It's still going to be maple pre-finished veneer plywood. It's just a little bit different. So
when I came to Indianapolis, I had to go find a supplier, and I only use pre-finished ply down in Fort Lauderdale in my shop. And I went into a local lumberyard that somebody suggested, and I said, "You guys sell plywood?" They go, "Yeah." And I said, "You guys got pre-finished maple plywood?" They go, "What's pre-finished?" I thought I had fallen off the planet, but I finally found it at another company. And that company I used going and still to this day I use. And I was so impressed. It was the supply chain that held me up here at the training center, but their price only went up about $8 a sheet during, which is unheard of, 10%. I was blown away, but they go, it's 6 weeks out. And I was like, back during COVID, it was a little, you know, rough here. We'd switch from doing trainings to doing videos and stuff like that. But that's okay. So speaking of pre-finish, I don't want to hold you up too much more, but I got another great question for you. I once again going through your feed, and I love talking about finishing. I saw a can of ML Campbell. Do you use ML Campbell? What finishes do you use? And let's talk just a little bit about that, because I think a lot of people are interested.
So finishes is what I, as I've gotten more and more involved with anything, separates the men and the boys. Because a lot of people are always going to say, you know, all the small guys out there, you know what, you're going to get a cool build, but the finish is going to be inferior to a completely industrial sprayed finish. And more you're like, oh yeah, whatever. And then more you look at it, you're like, absolutely. So if you're going to invest, you could have the best build of your life. You could have the best equipment to build your cabinets. You could have the this and that, and it looks amazing. But if you spray a pre-cat finish on your product, it's going to be horrible. It's not going to have longevity. It's not going to have any of that stuff. So you're basically taking it and just throwing it out there and saying, I don't care about the finish coat of anything like that. It's easy, but if it's easy, it's not necessarily the way to go. And so we went into a version of ML Campbell and eventually got into some of their Polarium product and some of their other types of things, which we were having pretty good usage and all that type of stuff with it. The biggest thing that happened with ML Campbell at that point was we got to the fact of the relationship with the actual supplier fell apart, where they didn't have the customer service that we needed. And so any type of things, whenever you're trying to pick your suppliers, if you don't have the customer service related with it, it's not going to be a supplier that you want to use, because they have to be part of your team and what you're actually doing. So kind of fell apart at that point. And I was like, oh, what are we going to do? And we go there and say, oh, it's going to be another 3 or 4 days before you get your color. And then we're like, well, we need it. And so many different things. So as I started looking, ran into a guy, and he's like, you got to talk to this one guy. I'm like, all right, sure, I'll talk to him. So he was a local guy here. And so I went and talked to him, and I was blown away. His knowledge and his thought process of how to finish things and what type of stuff to finish, I was absolutely blown away. And it went from a USA thought process of ML Campbell and pieces like that into the European process. And so we went with an Italian company called Renner, and we're spraying all 2K poly, polys, acrylics, all that type of stuff. And it has changed the finish immensely. Now we're spending a ton of money at it. We're spraying with air assisted systems. Sometimes we do gravity guns with 3 MPPS type of things, but either way, spraying with nice things. But if you're spraying with nice things and you have inferior top coats, then it's not going to matter either. So he has opened up a whole world of what type of stuff that we should be using and what professional industrial finishes is all about. It's worth every single dime. Every time we go there, I'm like, oh, there's another couple thousand dollars out the door, another couple thousand out the door. But overall, when we feel like I'm delivering our product to somebody, I feel like this is the finish that needs to be done. This is the, and I want to say the latest and greatest because Poly's been around for a while. We're still doing all catalyzed finishes. We're doing solvent-based type of things. We haven't switched any water because we don't have to yet. Water's come leaps and bounds, but I think it still has a long way to go with things like that. But
I agree.
But finishes are where it separates that type of stuff. So if there's a YouTube talking about some guy finishing someplace, take it for what it's worth. But if it's sold in a home store, I wouldn't trust it. On that type of thing. So you got to spend time. You got, I mean, that's the first thing you should be researching rather than what saw you want to buy to make your product better. You got to research what finish is going to make my cabinet better, because that is huge. I mean, we still use some stuff. We still use Rubio on certain types of things for where we use it. It works out perfect. Nothing wrong with that type of stuff, but it has its place. But if I'm going to sell a table, a lot of times I'm going to spray the best acrylic you can put onto it, because I feel like that is where a lot of tables need to be, is a great acrylic, because you're going to have a lot more of a professional top coat when it comes to that type of stuff. And so invest into finishes, because that's where the returns are going to come down the line, and not be like, hey, you know what, for the first year it looked great, and then 3 years later it started chipping off or started wearing off around handles or all those type of things. You don't want to hear that type of stuff.
And I know the answer, but I'm going to make sure, and I think you said it, that guy who introduced you to this new European finish, he's always there when you need him.
Absolutely. So I could call him right now and he'd be there. And so, and that's where, so if there's a problem, my, the guy who sprays all the stuff in the shop, he has his phone number. And that type of stuff. And so that's an important thing to, and it's the same guy all the time that we can talk to. And if we need 3 gallons tomorrow, he'll have 3 gallons ready for us tomorrow and it'll be ready to go. So, and that's part of, developing that, is developing your people that can stand behind you, because I'm not going to go out there and try to go directly to Renner and figure everything out. Whatever he's charging for his up, whatever, it's worth it, because we're basically having an employee as that type of stuff. He's part of our team. And I feel like we're getting the type of stuff. So I could come in there with a weird finish and say, hey, what did they do here? And he'd be like, it's this, this, and this, and that. And then he gives us the stuff and we can make it work on our side.
And I'm going to comment to everybody listening, there's tons of similarities to what we're talking about in Festool. I'm going to bring it around. And the reason I'm saying this, yes, you pay a little extra, maybe a lot of extra for Festool, but we're always there for you. It's about customer service. This is a conversation we have at Festool North America day in, day out. That's why we have people answer the phones. We're always hiring people to make sure that the customer service is there behind the sale. And you pay, you said it, a little extra for this finish, but you have that person there for you. Customer service is everything. I'll bring it back to lumber. The reason I use, and I'll call them out, Frank Miller Lumber, is because they're always there. They pick up the phone. If I ever have a situation with any of the wood, hardwood I buy or apply, they're there for me. And that's why I will pay extra, a lot extra sometimes, to get the right customer service. That's the name of the game in this industry. I don't know
part of it too, like
companies that have that.
Yeah. And part of it too is, I mean, customer service is great, but if you sell a good product too, you're not going to need customer service. So the times I've had my Festool products, people are like, oh, that's going to fall apart, or what are you going to do at this point? At that point, I've shipped one thing back to you in 20 years of using it, and every single other one that I have has still been working like the day that I bought it. So I haven't had to use your customer service on that side of things, because you've put a great product together, and it's not a, you don't look at the first price of anything. It's all about what are you investing in, and investing in stuff that is going to be consistent, that feels good. And that's why I've always been a huge proponent of that type of stuff too, because whether it's Festool or it's like the Renner stuff, it's cost more, but in the end, I think it pays for itself after a certain amount of time. So
absolutely. Okay. I really looked up at the clock right now.
No.
I want to be really respectful of your time. So I think this is how we should wrap it up. Hey, I could talk to you all day long, David. Right. I want to reach out. I just want to say thank you for spending this time with us. We really appreciate it. I know that everybody's who's listening has started the podcast with us and is going to be still listening, and they're going to want more. So maybe someday we can do another one together. But I want to say thank you from Festool North America for being part of this.
Yes, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Cool.